You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
Welcome to the podcast from the Foundational Questions Institute.
We're diving right in with the news that over the past few weeks, neutrinos have been solving some mysteries while raising new ones.
Neutrinos are tiny, almost massless elementary particles that interact only very weakly with other matter, which makes them tough to detect. They travel at close to the speed of light and are thought to come in three varieties or flavors: the electron neutrino, the muon neutrino, and the tau neutrino.
We'll talk more about whether particle physicists may have discovered a fourth flavor called the sterile neutrino in a few moments. First, though, I caught up with Azadeh Kivani, an astrophysicist now at Columbia University in New York, who is a team member on the IceCube Neutrino Observatory, which has detectors at the South Pole, waiting to pick up signs of neutrinos that visit Earth from other galaxies. In July, the IceCube collaboration announced that for the first time, they had tracked some speedy neutrinos back to their source, a blazar emitting high-energy matter from a distant galaxy. Kivani explained to me how they were able to do this, despite neutrinos being so difficult to grab hold of.
Most of the neutrinos just pass through the Earth without interacting, but some of them, a very tiny fraction, would interact inside of our planet. So one way that we decided to do this was with the IceCube Neutrino Observatory, which is actually a gigaton detector located at the South Pole. So in order to detect these neutrinos, we used a cubic kilometer of ice that is already there at the South Pole. So we didn't need to buy the material. We already had ice molecules and ice over there at the South Pole. So we decided to build sensors and detectors and insert them in the ice in order to capture these neutrinos.
Okay, so when neutrinos from a distant galaxy pass through the Earth, occasionally one will be picked up in the block of ice detectors at the South Pole. But how do the astrophysicists work out just from that where the neutrino originally came from? Here's Kivani.
So since these particles are chargeless, they don't get deflected by magnetic fields and they are not absorbed by any particles in the universe. So if they are produced somewhere in, let's say, a certain galaxy, they can travel all the way without being attenuated or absorbed or any other interactions. So it brings information from that part of the universe to us. And it's so amazing that that tiny particle can actually have this much energy. So the energy that they can carry is as much as like an energy in, say, a golf ball. So if someone hits the golf ball and it hits you, you can imagine how much energy it has actually transferred to your body and you can feel it. So imagine that golf ball is big and you can see it, but the neutrino is too small. Actually, the smallest particle in the universe can carry that much energy and come all the way from billions of light years away, which is really exciting. So we study them, we look at their location, we trace them back and see what's going on in the other part of the universe to study the universe around us and discover about other parts of the universe.
So because neutrinos aren't deflected by magnetic fields, they travel to Earth in a straight line, and you can tell which direction they came from. But there's still a bit of detective work to find out their exact source, with extra clues coming from other independent telescopes and observatories searching for different types of particles and signals. This is called multi-messenger astrophysics, and it involved IceCube sending an alert to other telescopes in real time when they spotted an exciting candidate neutrino with information about the direction from which it was coming. Then it was up to other astronomers to jump in and help trace its source. Kivani played an instrumental role in setting up the communications network, which is hosted at Penn State University, where she used to work.
So as soon as a neutrino arrives, we send the alert to the astronomical community in less than a minute. So as soon as they get the alert, they start looking at the direction of the neutrino to see if there is anything going on at that point. The other observatories, such as NASA satellites, the Fermi satellite, the SWIFT satellite, that they are sensitive to gamma rays and X-rays, they can quickly follow up the location. So these are the satellites, but there are also telescopes on the ground that they can quickly slew to the direction that Ice Cube has been and observe that part of the sky. And the good thing is that all these telescopes are sensitive to a variety of wavelengths, so each of them is sensitive to one wavelength or one particle.
In the latest study, when Ice Cube gave the alert, the SWIFT telescope was one of those that responded, searching the direction of the neutrino's incoming path for any sources of X-rays and also for ultraviolet and optical light. Keivani was leading the effort to analyze this new data, and she and her colleagues found 9 X-ray sources clustered together in a circle. They thought that the one at the center was the most likely source of the high-energy neutrinos, but they still needed more information from NASA's Fermi telescope, which looks for gamma rays.
One of them was very close to the center, which was very interesting, but at the time we couldn't say anything. So 2 days later, Fermi Large Area Telescope could see gamma rays from that location. But the gamma ray, comparing to historical data, the data that they took in previous months, was actually showing a flare, showing that the object over there is a known active galactic nucleus that is emitting gamma rays, or a blazar. So the blazars are actually active galaxies that they have a supermassive black hole in the center, and matter is rotating so fast around this supermassive black hole and sending the particles of light in a very energetic jet going from two sides of the disk, perpendicular to the disk, and one of these jets is pointing exactly towards us on Earth. So we can detect a lot of particles and light. So there were a lot of optical telescopes that started to observe the location in order to estimate the distance to the blazar. And they finally, one of them could observe the distance to the blazar, and we figured out that it was about 4 billion light years away.
So there you have it. The neutrinos came from a blazar. They were shot out towards Earth from a high-speed jet of matter emanating from the neighborhood of a supermassive black hole at the center of a distant galaxy about 4 billion light years away. But just what mechanism is producing all this activity is still unknown. So there are plenty more puzzles left to solve for astrophysicists studying speedy neutrinos from the heavens.
Meanwhile, back at the lab. Meanwhile, neutrinos closer to home are raising new questions too, as physicists working on the mini-boon experiment at Fermilab outside Chicago announced in June. Neutrinos usually come in 3 flavors, electron, muon, and tau, and switch back and forth between them. In the late 1990s, physicists working on the LSND experiment at the Los Alamos National Laboratory claimed to see hints of a 4th neutrino, a sterile neutrino. This neutrino only would have a slight gravitational effect on other matter, but it would not interact in any other way. Physicists have been interested for a long time in the possibility that sterile neutrinos could be candidates for dark matter, explaining the origin of the bizarre invisible matter that seems to make up much of the matter in the universe. But LSND's experiment hadn't been independently replicated, and their sterile neutrino hadn't been spotted since.
Not until now, that is. Over at Fermilab, Mini-Boon's physicists set out to see if they could independently detect sterile neutrinos. They do seem to have found a strange candidate particle that fits the bill. They haven't seen a sterile neutrino directly. What they actually saw in their detector is a surprisingly large number of electron neutrinos. Their belief is that some muon neutrinos shapeshifted into sterile neutrinos, which in turn transformed into electron neutrinos, explaining the unexpected higher number of electron neutrinos. I called one of the lead researchers, Richard Vanderwater of Los Alamos National Laboratory, earlier, and he told me what they saw.
So the signature that we're looking for is a muon neutrino oscillating into an electron neutrino. So you're looking for a very small signal, a fraction of a percent. You can predict what are the number of electron neutrinos you would see. And in this case, we saw more electron neutrinos than were predicted.
So one reason for this strange excess of electron neutrinos could indeed be that some muon neutrinos changed first to sterile neutrinos and then to electron neutrinos. But could there be any other explanations? Here's Van de Water.
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. And I'm not completely convinced it's sterile neutrinos either, because there are other models. There are some pretty exotic models, you know, people talking about extra dimensions. And so there could be something else. May not be sterile neutrinos. It could be some other physics, some new particle production, or a heavy sterile neutrino that's not oscillating but decaying. So there has been some effort into thinking of other possibilities. But because LS&E started with the sterile neutrino model, that's the one that we use Miniboon to test. And this is another important point. Now you have two experiments when tested under this particular model get the same answer. You know, the number of events we're seeing is what we'd expect from LS&D when you project out, and the shape, the energy shape. So, you know, if it's a background or a mistake, then, and because these two experiments are completely different, they both have to have then completely different mistakes, and the odds of that are starting to get small. So that now starts to make it hard to just dismiss Miniboon as, oh, it was a mistake, which is kind of what, you know, people would like to do. But, you know, you come back around to this saying, well, wow, they got the same answer. But you're perfectly right. It may not be sterile neutrinos. It could be some other physics. We need more experiments now to really kind of understand. And the best way to do that is with two detectors at different distances and show that you see a difference in the appearance of the electron neutrinos as a function of distance. Then that would be smoking gun proof that, aha, this is sterile neutrinos.
Thank you to Richard Van de Water and Azadeh Kivani for first clearing up and then causing some more confusion about the elusive and ethereal neutrino.
On the podcast page, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast, we're posting links to news articles about those two results.